This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, and today we're talking about StoryCorps, a national oral history project that has recorded more than 50,000 interviews around the country. These conversations are archived at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress, but a select few of them are also edited for broadcast on national radio. StoryCorps stories sound like short audio poetry and often leave listeners lingering in driveways and parking lots to hear how they end. As you might imagine, a fair amount of work goes into these programs and into these pieces, and today we're going to meet two of the people who are doing that work every week. Michael Garofalo and Katie Simon are the project's two senior producers, and they join us today. Michael and Katie, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi, nice to be here.
Hi, Frank.
Michael, tell me what exactly a StoryCorps producer does.
Well, a StoryCorps producer has sort of two big jobs. One is to take a look at everything that's coming in from all our different recording booths. We have booths all across the country and the traveling booth, and decide what in there has potential for a radio story, to send it back to New York, get it cut, and to play it at our weekly production meeting.
So Katie, exactly what are you listening for?
You know, we're listening for stories that sort of pop out, ones that are particularly poignant or funny. We're also listening for stories that we feel like have some sort of universality to them. We want people in New York and Durham and San Francisco to all be able to relate to the stories while still highlighting the differences around the country as well.
I know you've recorded a number of stories in North Carolina over the years. We want to listen to some of them. In fact, you recorded a piece of forgotten history in Wilmington a number of years ago. Katie, tell us about that.
So this piece is really about how a kiss made civil rights history. It happened in Monroe, North Carolina in 1958. And two African-American children, James Hanover Thompson and his friend David Simpson, were accused of kissing a girl who was white. They were arrested and they were charged with rape. It became known around the world as the kissing case, but it's largely been forgotten over time. The Thompson family rarely talked about it, but I think we're actually going to hear from two of them. This is James Hanover Thompson and his younger brother, Dwight.
We were playing with some friends over in the white neighborhood, chasing spiders and wrestling and stuff like that. One of the little kids suggested that one of the little white girls give us a kiss on the jaw. The little girl gave me a peck on the cheek, and then she kissed David on the cheek. So we didn't think nothing of it. We were just little kids.
How old was it?
I was 9 years old. David was 7. Really, they didn't hardly know what a kiss was. And so we went on home like nothing happened, you know. And the next day, the police car pulled up, and they said, "We're taking y'all to jail." I didn't know what was going on. But when we got down to the police station, we understand that they said that we had raped a little white girl. They took us down in the bottom of the police station to a cell, and they had us handcuffed. They started beating us. They was beating us to our body, you know. They didn't beat us to the face where nobody could see it. They just punched us all in the stomach and back and legs. We was hollering and screaming. We thought they was going to kill us. And so we stayed in jail for 6 or 7 days before our parents ever got a chance to see us. And they sent me to a psychologist. And I would go see that man every week. I had to go see him. And he'd tell me they should have castrated y'all. I mean, it was just something.
So how did it make you feel now? I mean, how old are you now?
I'm 62 now.
62.
I still feel the hurt and the pain from it. And nobody have never said, "Hey, look, I'm sorry what happened to y'all. It was wrong." And I always sit around and I wonder, if this hadn't happened to me, you know, what could I have turned out to be? Could I have been a doctor? Could I have went off to some college or some great school and just destroyed our life?
James Hanover Thompson and David Simpson were eventually pardoned by North Carolina's governor. James spent much of the rest of his life in and out of prison for robbery. His sister, Brenda Lee Graham, also came to StoryCorps with her younger brother, Dwight. And she talked about what it was like for the rest of the family while James was in jail.
Mom was a nervous wreck. She didn't sleep. She'd be up walking the floors and praying. And I remember that at night, you could see them burning crosses.
Right down the front yard?
Right down the front yard. And my mom and them, they would go out in the mornings and sweep bullets off our front porch. And see, James, he was away for a while. And when he came back, It was like seeing somebody different that you didn't even know. He never talked about what he went through then. But ever since then, his mind just hadn't been the same. My brother and his friend had to suffer on account of that. And I mean, they suffered. One kiss. I've thought about that. It all started with a kiss.
Couple of conversations recorded in North Carolina for StoryCorps. I'm talking with StoryCorps Project senior producers Katie Simon and Michael Garofalo. And Katie, obviously powerful stories. Stories, as you said, had made the rounds in the press back in the late 50s, and yet the families really hadn't talked about it much, right?
Exactly. Well, this is one type of story that we try to do. We often refer to it as a forgotten history story. You know, we have this luxury, since we're not doing news, that we can delve back into stories that really aren't in the public consciousness right now and sort of get a new perspective by talking with people now. I know that's one that both Michael and I really, really enjoy working on, that type of story.
Very powerful story. You do other types of stories as well. I know StoryCorps recorded an interview a number of years ago in Durham about a dying profession. Michael, tell us about that one.
Yeah, that was an interview between Greg Goines and Steve Nelms, and it was recorded in Durham, right on the tobacco campus there. These two guys were tobacco auctioneers for a long, long time. Of course, they no longer are employed. They came in to talk about the tradition and the people they learned from and to do a little auctioneering on mic.
Let's hear a little clip.
My name is Greg Goines. I'm 61 years old.
I'm Steve Nelms. I'm 57 years old. Greg and I, we were tobacco auctioneers for a long time.
We have been. We're not anything now. That's all over.
American 82.
Now, you do the starting, Steve.
82.
82, darling.
When I went to auction school, we started off, we just hum numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then we hum them backwards.
You know, if a tobacco auctioneer would follow the whole circuit, he didn't spend about 2 months at home. We'd travel from Georgia to North Carolina. And then we'd either go to Tennessee or Kentucky, later on to Virginia. And you look forward to it every year. You know, when July came, we'd get ready to travel. We all wore coats and ties, and everybody dressed up. It was a job to have a lot of pride in. But in the last 10, 12 years, that has really changed.
And I knew we were going to see some change, but I had no idea it would be this this drastic and this quick.
We've lost a lifestyle. See?
Yeah, we lost a complete lifestyle. We really did. Mm-hmm. And plus, we lost a job and a livelihood. Tobacco business, it's been good for us. Been good to us. And I have enjoyed it.
Definitely. I mean, hey, this has been my life 35 years. It was.
Couple of auctioneers talking to each other on StoryCorps. They were recorded here in Durham. Michael Garofalo is one of the senior producers for StoryCorps, and I'm talking with him today. So, Michael, it's kind of interesting to hear that piece because it represents kind of two types of story, right? I mean, a lot of people have lost their jobs and with whole industries that have gone out of business, but this is a very particular industry, too. So I guess you've got the best of both worlds. A very local, very particular story that might have traction nationally, right?
Yeah, and as Katie said earlier, I think that's when StoryCorps is at its best, is when it's a universal story. It's something that anybody anywhere in the country can understand and, you know, it will resonate with you. But it doesn't lose the local character and the local flavor of the place it was recorded. And one thing that I think StoryCorps really tries to do and is really good at, too, is capturing these voices and these traditions and jobs that are disappearing and that won't be around for much longer. And that's a real value of the project.
I wonder how you balance this. I mean, if you're, you know, people come from out of town, the facilitators, you as producers, you're not all from each region of the country. How do you develop an ear for an accent, a way of speaking that treats those speakers lovingly and not quite kind of as colorful artifacts, you know, as caricatures? I mean, it seems to me that that's one of the occupational hazards that you've managed to avoid at StoryCorps.
Oh, well, I consider that a compliment. Thank you very much. I think it's just about respecting what the person has to say. You know, we don't dictate what people say in the booth. And we just try to be as true in the editing process, because all these pieces do come out of a longer interview. We try to be as true as possible to their natural cadence, the way that someone speaks, and the rhythm of their speech as possible. We try not to manipulate that in a way that could sound reductive in some way. Right. Well, we want to celebrate people.
I know you've also done a collection of interviews with the military population here, Katie. Will you tell us about one of the ones that you recorded in Rayford, North Carolina?
Sure. This originally aired when the Pentagon announced that some of the same benefits given to heterosexual married couples could be extended to same-sex partners. But gay marriage is still not fully recognized by the Pentagon. North Carolina National Guardsman Tracy Johnson was paying close attention to those changes. She's an Iraq veteran and an Army widow. Tracy married her longtime partner, Staff Sergeant Donna Johnson, on Valentine's Day a few years ago. But in October 2012, Donna was killed by a suicide bomber while serving in Afghanistan. Tracy is believed to be the first gay spouse to lose her partner at war since the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And when she was at StoryCorps, Tracy talked with her mother-in-law, Sandra Johnson, about finding out that their wife and daughter wasn't coming home.
Let's hear a clip.
That day, I had a bad feeling. I immediately started scouring the news websites, and it said that they were three U.S. soldiers were killed in Khost, Afghanistan. And I knew, obviously, that's where she was stationed.
So how did you get notified?
I knew that any communication about Donna was going to come to you guys, because even though we were married, I wasn't considered her next of kin. So Donna's sister called me and told me that the military people were there. So I grabbed a copy of our marriage certificate. I went to your place, and I said, you know, I am her wife, and I brought documentation. The notification officer looks at it. And he looks at me, and he looks at it again. He goes, can I have a copy of this? And when a soldier's fallen, they usually have a military escort that brings them home. And I said, can I do it because I'm military? He goes, well, we'll see. But I know it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for your insistence.
I did not want her coming home with a stranger. I wanted to come home to family.
I was flown up to Dover to see her brought back on American soil. And I honestly can't tell you how great of an honor it is to escort a fallen hero home. But then when that hero is your wife, it means a lot more. And I was given all her awards and all her personal documents that I had to turn over to you. And one of the hardest things for me was our wedding ring. I actually slept with it that night. I put her ring on with mine, because I thought it was going to be the last time I was going to get to see it.
Wow. I gave you your ring back. I thought that was only natural. Because I don't know how the Army or any military does it. I just know what's fair is fair.
You know, I'm so thankful for everything you've done. You allowed me to be named as a spouse in the obituary. Being given a flag and a private ceremony before the funeral. Being given a second copy of all her awards. Being allowed to sit in the front pew. And pretty much being treated as family the entire time, because in reality,
you married my daughter, and that was it.
But if anybody else were in my shoes, they could have been completely shut out and not had anything. So I understand how blessed I am to be a part of your family.
Well, I want you to know that I'm very proud of you. I consider you mine, because Donna considered you hers, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Talking about StoryCorps today on The State of Things, and we're focusing on some of the StoryCorps stories recorded here in North Carolina with senior producers Michael Garofalo and Katie Simon. You know, it strikes me in listening to that story that there are fundamentally two types of stories, lots and lots and lots of kinds, but there are those stories or conversations where people want to find something out. They're talking to someone to learn something, and this is a remarkable kind of conversation where both people live the experience and they're telling it to each other, which is a remarkable revelation all by itself, but of a very different kind, would you say?
Yeah, I think that actually might happen a lot in our Military Voices Initiative project and the stories we're recording there, because, you know, we often have two people who have have lived this experience, whether it's spouses or, you know, a mother and a son or something like that, but from very different perspectives.
Tell us about that decision, because you have looked at very different populations and made a deliberate effort to hear from, in particular, the military. Tell us about the decision to identify those populations and kind of make this affirmative effort to hear stories from those groups.
Yeah, we've had a number of initiatives over the years. The Military Voices one is sort of the most recent. And, you know, it's a part of our larger goal as an organization. We want to make sure we're really recording the stories of all Americans. We have identified different populations at different times to sort of focus on, to make sure we're really getting those stories. And we've also focused on the stories of Latinos in the United States, and we're going to be starting a new initiative based on the LGBTQ community as well.
Well, you did one that struck very close to home. Our former chief engineer, David Wright, was one of the participants, and I want to listen to that segment. It featured two interviews recorded right here in Durham from 8 years ago and one from the most recent mobile stop. Michael, would you tell us about it?
Sure. Well, as you said, David Wright, who formerly worked at WUNC, the first time we were there in 2006, brought in his friend Eddie Lanier Jr. At the time, Eddie was homeless and a recovering alcoholic. And he also had a history that not many people knew about. He's actually the son of the former mayor of Chapel Hill. During their first interview, they spoke about Eddie's past and their friendship, which actually began on a highway exit ramp where Eddie was holding a sign asking for help.
Every time you came by, you'd stick out a $2 bill and a can of tuna fish. And it was New Year's Eve, and I had nowhere to go, couldn't drink, everybody's partying. And you walk on over and said, remember me? I said, yeah, you're the $2 bill man. He said, I'm going to take you home with me for a New Year's Eve party. How would you like that? I went to your home and had a shower, and you gave me some clean clothes. And we sat down at the table, and I told you some stories about who I really was and who my daddy was. There was a lot more to me than you might imagine.
I hope I was a little bit of a help along your path.
Well, you know, David, without your kindness, I don't know. I wouldn't say I'd have gone back drinking again, but I'd say it would have been rough.
So Eddie is no longer homeless. In fact, he lives with David now. Unfortunately, Eddie is suffering from a very advanced stage of emphysema, and he doesn't have much time left. So David did bring him back to StoryCorps to talk about his life one last time.
You're now in the hospice program.
I guess it's my turn now.
It's your turn.
My prognosis is that I should be dead a month from now. I honestly tell you, I look forward to dying. There's a lot of people out there that'll do anything to stay alive. Heart transplants, anything. But I'm telling you, I've done my business here, and I'm ready to go home. And when I wake up in the morning, to tell you the truth, I'm pissed off that I'm still here. Only way I get through a day, David, is to say, well, I'm going to make my life worthwhile by saying something of value that you can keep with you and that can help you.
And I'm grateful for that. You're certainly an inspiration to learn about how to live. And the last chapter here over the months, How to Die.
I want to say one thing about you. You've really, really been patient with me. And you care for me tremendously. That's going to count on your record of stays. And you got the finest record of anybody. Thank you for helping me so much.
Oh, you've helped me so much. Thank you.
It's just one of the 50,000 remarkable conversations recorded over the past 10 years by StoryCorps senior producers Michael Garofalo and Katie Simon with us today. So Michael and Katie, I'll start with you, Michael. What have you taken away from all of this listening that you've done over these past years?
Oh, man. You know, it's just an incredible privilege to get to listen to the wisdom of people who have lived these incredibly diverse and interesting lives. I've heard something that can be a little bit of support at some point in my life when I'm dealing with something that I've heard other people talk about. It's really a gift
Katie?
Yeah, I would agree. I'd say a little bit of perspective, too, you know, as you're going through your life and you have your own struggles and your own disappointments. I feel really lucky to sort of rely on a lot of the stories and the voices I've heard to sort of put everything, you know, in my own life in perspective.
Well, thank you both for your hard work over the years, and thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Garofalo and Katie Simon, two of the senior producers at the National Oral History Project StoryCorps. We are going to continue our conversation about StoryCorps with some staff members who've been recording conversations right here in the Triangle over the past month. Stay with us.